You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Jungle Deep, 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 Deep.
The podcast that explores the tropical lifestyle. Hello, this is your host, Dr. Jones. I am not the now famous Dr. Jones of the movies. No, that's not me. You see, Indy is my brother. And just as Indiana so much appreciates the treasures of history known as antiquities, I have always appreciated the treasures of a different kind, the treasures of nature, treasures of the jungle. We are on safari. Sorry, there is no going back. You are already a part of it, as are tropical plants and exotic animals, exotica music and jungle movies, tropical cocktails and exotic foods, rainforest preservation and wildlife conservation. And so, I am here with you to have fun and to explore the jungle.
We'll be right back, right after these messages. Stay tuned.
Petco. Where the pets go. Petco. Where the pets go.
Pet Life Radio has tail wagging, fur flying, fabulous deals for our listeners from Petco. Get $6 off your order of $60 or more and up to 40% off the entire Petco site.
That's right.
But that's not all.
Because you're a Pet Life Radio listener, you'll also get free shipping on your order of $49 or more. $6 off, up to 40% off,
and free shipping
from Pet Life Radio and Petco. To get these awesome deals, go to PetcoDeals.com. That's PetcoDeals.com.
Petco, where the pets go.
I'm not much of a reader, but I do wish I were more well-read.
There are so many great books coming out. I wish I could find a way to keep up.
Audible.com makes it easy to stay well informed and catch up on your reading simply by listening. Audiobooks from Audible turn downtime into uptime. You'll be more productive and become well-read.
Now I'm able to catch up on all the great books I've been wanting to read.
With Audible, I feel smarter.
Pet Life Radio listeners, try Audible.com now and get your first 30 days of Audible Listener Gold Membership plan free. And get a free audiobook. Choose from over 100,000 titles. To get this great deal, go to audibledeals.com. That's audibledeals.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Hello, welcome to this episode. Today we're going to explore the world of Tarzan, Lord of the Apes. Tarzan is the most famous character associated with the jungle. He was the creation of the famous adventure author Edgar Rice Burroughs. Not counting all the books, nearly 90 movies and 6 TV shows have been produced about Tarzan in the nearly 100 years since he first appeared on the silver screen. That's an amazing average of about 1 per year for 100 consecutive years. It's hard to think of any character in the history of the movies that has received that much attention. While in other episodes we are going to be learning about the science of the real jungles of today and talking with some modern explorers, in this episode we are going back in time to take a look at how people perceived the jungles 100 years ago through the focusing lens of Tarzan. To take us on this particular safari, we have as our guide a leading expert on Tarzan and producer of a new documentary about Tarzan's very first movie. His name is Al Bohl. Al's new documentary is called Tarzan, Lord of the Louisiana Jungle, about the historic Tarzan silent movie made in 1918, which was shot not in Africa or South America, but in the swamps of Louisiana. Al is the art director at the Science Museum, known as SciPort, in Louisiana, and stumbled into this amazing piece of history some 4 years ago. And so, we begin our interview. I want to introduce art director and documentary film producer Al Bohl. Al, say hello to our listeners.
Hey, how you doing?
Glad you're joining us. It's going to be so exciting because you just completed a major documentary film project together with your daughter. I'm very anxious to hear about it. That's Tarzan, Lord of the Louisiana Jungle. Did I get that right?
Right.
And this is a study of the original, the very first Tarzan movie ever made. And I want to know, how did your adventure with Tarzan begin?
Well, I've always enjoyed Tarzan, and as a kid, I watched the Tarzan movies, the black and white Johnny Weissmuller. It seemed like they showed every Saturday morning, and so I really enjoyed those. A number of years ago now, I was having breakfast with some men, and one of them said they were from Morgan City, and that's where they made the first Tarzan movie in 1917. And then he said, you know, they say that they brought in apes and monkeys, and when they finished shooting, the animals wouldn't get back in the cages, so they just left them.
Shooting the movie, that is.
Yes, right. Not they shooting the animals.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
And that just really intrigued me. A couple of years go by. My daughter goes to school, studies filmmaking. And one night I'm surfing the internet and I run across erbzine.com and give anything that you want to know about Burroughs of Tarzan. And I researched it and found out it was a really big story, not just one little story about monkeys, but a big story. And Allison and I got together and decided this is what we wanted to do. So we invested 4 years of our lives in it.
Now, Al, for the benefit of our listeners, I just want to explain that for those that don't know, Morgan City is a city in Louisiana. These were stories about the original movie being shot there. It was shot in Louisiana, not in Africa or South America or anywhere else, except, of course, some stage stuff they did back in California. I think that's how it went, right? But the outdoor stuff was shot in Louisiana outside of this, or really around this town of Morgan City. And so the story you heard was that there was maybe some monkeys and gorillas running through the swamps of Louisiana that were left over from this Tarzan movie?
Yeah, now this swamp is not a little, it's the largest swamp in North America. It's the Chaffalaya River Basin. And I forget how many hundreds of thousands of acres it is. And it is a virtual sportsman's paradise. It's very possible that they're still out there. Now, more than likely, no chimpanzees or gorillas are there. Of course, they're very social and extremely dangerous. We would have heard about them if there were apes out there. But it's very possible that monkeys are still there.
So you heard this story over lunch one day, and you started looking into it. And at what point did you decide you're going to take this even further and get involved in making a film? This is kind of where your daughter comes in. We haven't explained that yet either, but your daughter, Allison, is a filmmaker. You want to tell us a little bit about how this came together?
I'd always look for a project, but, you know, too many things are forced. I didn't want to just write a story and make a film. I really wanted to do something that I felt like would really be interesting to people and be one that would have a lot of history involved in it, because I love history. Allison, with her last 6 years, she's been documenting the Cajun culture, which is in South Louisiana. Most things you see about the Cajun culture on television are all the swamp people and those billionaire shows and all that, but it really make fun of Louisiana. But her documentaries have all been celebrating the Cajun culture, and they've been extremely well received. There was a natural for her because she already lives in South Louisiana. I went down to Morgan City and did some research, and the town was so excited because, you know, they were happy to know that somebody cared about their city again. And they've always thought the Tarzan movie being made there was really important to them.
So they generally knew about it. It was in the community consciousness that this had in fact happened nearly 100 years ago there in their town?
Yeah, they really did. They had a card that had a Tarzan figurine in it. So for years and years, they've known about this.
So they probably figured that you and your project were a little bit overdue.
Right. Well, you know, a lot of people have started the project, but they probably did it the smart way. Is they said, we want to do this project. Let's go raise the money and do it. And I thought, I want to do the project. I'm not worried about raising the money. If I have to pay for it myself or whatever, I'm going to do it. And so that's my mindset, is find the money somewhere and make it happen. And so I did a lot of freelance advertising art and this sort of thing to pay for it.
Al, what was that moment that you got the idea of actually making a movie about this subject?
No, I can't remember the exact moment, but it was just talking with Allison. Actually, I take it back. I do know. I wrote out about 20 questions that had to be answered. If I couldn't get answers that were interesting and valid, I would just walk away. And I was able to research and find those answers. And what they did is they opened up to a lot of other things that were fascinating and interesting. So I knew then that I had the project to sell the farm for.
So tell us a little bit about the original movie. It was filmed in 1917, mostly in Morgan City. They were there for, what did I read, 9 weeks or so shooting this. So tell us a little bit about this first Tarzan movie. This is back in the black and white silent film era. How did it come about and how did they do it?
Burroughs released the Tarzan story in a book form in 1914. It came out in a magazine in 1912, which is the 100th anniversary of Tarzan this year, 2012. And he wanted from the very beginning, when it came out as a book, to see it as a movie, even though movies were in their infancy. And so he was looking for somebody to do it. And a guy comes along named Smiling Bill Parsons, who is a former insurance salesman and a cinematic comedian. And Parsons says he wants to be the producer. He raises the money, and he actually makes a really good film. And he did it really in three places. He shot a majority of it in Morgan City, and that was in the exteriors out in the jungles there in Morgan City, swamp. He shot some of it in California at what was the Oz studio that they bought and made into National Film Studio. And then they took some travelogue footage from Africa and blended it in. And I don't think anyone had ever done that before, to take three separate places and blend it so well. In fact, it looks even better, I think, than the way they used to do the Johnny Weissmuller films with the rear screen projection. A little more realistic. They went to Morgan City for three reasons. Number one, they were looking for swamp. Number two, a large population of African Americans to play natives. They needed a good transportation system. And because of seafood and moss and cotton and all that, they had a great rail system in South Louisiana. So those are the three reasons they went to Morgan City.
And they went during the hottest time of the year, did they not?
They did. But they kind of had to. If they'd gone in the spring, the water's too high. If they went in the fall, the African Americans would have been harvesting and they couldn't have been in the film. So they kind of stuck with that time period, bumping up on their release date, which was in January 1918.
And how did they pick their Tarzan?
Originally, they talked to Elmo Lincoln about doing it, but he wanted too much money. And Stellan Windrow was a athlete, and he came walking in the office of the casting people in Chicago, and he looked the part. I mean, Stellan looked great. And so they hired Stellan. He was cheaper. And they did the arboreal scenes where he's up in the trees for about a couple of weeks, and then he got drafted into the First War. And so they went ahead and said, okay, Elmo, we'll pay what you wanted, which was $100 a week. He was the Tarzan. When you watch the film, you'll see two Tarzans. When he's up in a tree, he's Stellan Windrow. When he's on the ground or lower limbs, he is Elmo Lincoln.
How about that?
They actually had five people play the Tarzan. They had a newborn, a one-year-old. Gordon Griffith played Tarzan as a 10-year-old, and he had virtually the whole second act was Gordon Griffith.
And he was a well-known child actor at the time.
Yes, that's right. He was. And he eventually became a producer in Hollywood and died when he was about 51. He never had any kids or anything like that. But he was highly regarded as a child actor. And he played in several Tarzan films. He was in The Son of Tarzan. He was in The Adventures of Tarzan. He was in Romance of Tarzan and Tarzan the Apes.
So what else can you tell us about the production of this movie at the time?
We touched on it earlier, and that's about the heat. The August heat in Louisiana is incredibly intense. if they had any kind of lights, it would have even made it more. They went into the jungle to film this, and they got malaria, and they were taking large doses of quinine and red bug infestation. And it was, they had to travel by steamboat to get out there to the set to film. So it was very perilous for them to do this. They hired to dress in these ape costumes they made, and now we would consider them, you know, almost humorous, but at that time they were state of the art. And they also had six circus acrobats who really were the choreographers for the other, these gymnasts dressed in the ape costumes. And they could only wear these costumes for like a minute before having to tear the heads off and grow hair. Yeah,
that's got to be the worst job in the world in that weather, in that place at that time.
Right, and, you know, they didn't come back to Louisiana to make movies for a while. They probably went back to L.A. and said never again, because it was very hostile.
Were there any stories of the lead actor himself, Elmo Lincoln, getting ill from that environment?
No, he didn't. There's no stories about him getting ill. He does lose some weight in it while he's there. You can tell a little bit in the film as you watch it. He liked the fact that, according to his daughter, who I talked to for the documentary, he liked the fact that the trees were bent over. And, you know, there'd been like 40 hurricanes and tropical storms. And it's almost like a magnet where they hits the Gulf Coast there at Louisiana. So a lot of trees were bent over. So he just had to run along them instead of having to climb them.
And your film mentions that Elmo was hired to a large degree just for his chest, because he had such a huge chest.
That's right, 53 inches expanded. You know, Superman had a chest like 51 inches expanded, I think.
Oh, I didn't know.
Elmo had a very big chest. But, you know, people had a tendency through the years to make fun a little bit of Elmo because he was a little beefier than, say, a Ron Ely or somebody like that. But at that time, that was kind of the look for strong men. It was more of a strong man look than it was a Charles Atlas. But as far as a person, Elmo was one of the finest people. He was a really, really wonderful man. Had a great heart. He loved Tarzan. Loved it.
And did he go on to make other Tarzan movies?
He made three Tarzan films. He made a Tarzan of the Apes, Romance of Tarzan, and The Adventures of Tarzan, which was a serial. And then he went from there and made a series, movies called Elmo the Mighty and this sort of thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. All of them were strongman serials.
Uh-huh.
So he was a very popular actor.
Well, I guess that made him some money then.
In the silent era. Yeah.
Well, we probably should mention the Jane in this movie, too.
Yeah, Enid Markey. And Brian Bonnet is releasing a biography of her. She was a very popular actress. She left after the first or second Tarzan film because she didn't want to be typecast as Jane. And she went to Broadway and eventually made other films and television shows. She was in Andy Griffith's show. She was Barney's landlady and also played Gomer Pyle's grandmother.
Wow. So that's a lot of years. Her entire life she was into acting.
Yeah. And she was really well known on Broadway. She'd made a lot of films. You know, she was a leading lady for William S. Hart, who was one of the first cowboy actors in silent era. So she was very, very well thought of.
Well, now, Al, let's move on. And there's so much to cover here, and I know we're not going to have near enough time. I tell us, how was this movie received? What was the result of the making of this film?
Oh, it was a mega hit. I mean, it came out in 1918, January. This is when the war was about to start. And they were still suffering from the Spanish flu and all this, but it didn't keep people away. I mean, it played almost every theater in every city in the United States alone, and it was one of the first to make $1 million at the box office domestically. It also was one of the top six silent films of that era.
It was huge.
It was an epic, yes. It wasn't as huge as Birth of a Nation. But it was an epic film. And they used to charge like 7 cents to get in to see a movie. But with Tarzan, they charged anywhere from $1.50 to $2.50.
Mm,
we're talking
really?
Some big change there for that time period.
What did that do for Burroughs, Edgar Rice Burroughs?
Well, it really gave him the money he needed. You know, the books were doing okay. But when this film came out, Tarzan exploded. People couldn't get enough Tarzan. And it gave him enough money from the residuals of the books up to that time and this film to virtually all of San Fernando Valley. And what is now a small part of what he owned is now Tarzana, California, Ventura Boulevard and all that. So he owned a lot of it.
From what I saw, it was a beautiful, huge Spanish ranch.
Yes.
And he went out and bought that the very next year.
Right, and a golf course. and everything. He was very much an outdoorsman. You know, Burroughs is, and I cover him in great detail in the film. He was most people would consider him pretty much a failure to the age of 35. He tried everything. He sold patent medicine door to door. He was a cowboy, a gold miner, military guy. He did so many jobs and just never could find, he never could scratch the itch until finally one day he decided to write a story, which became Princess of Mars. Most people would know it listening now as John Carter. He wrote that in 19, and it was actually published in 1912, so that was his first effort.
Not too much later did he write Tarzan then.
That's right. It came out the same year, and normally they serialized those books, but they loved Tarzan so much that they put out the whole story in one magazine.
We'll be right back, right after these messages. Stay tuned.
Introducing the new Bret Michaels Pets Rock Collection, exclusively at PetSmart. I created it for the pets that rock your world.
Shop the Bret Michaels Pets Rock Collection and celebrate PetSmart's 25th anniversary with up to 25% off thousands of items on the PetSmart site. Plus free shipping on orders of $49 or more. Go to PetSmartDeal.com. That's PetSmartDeal.com. PetSmartDeal.com.
Dyson.
The new Dyson Animal Vacs are powerful bagless upright vacuums for homes with pets. Air muscle and radio root cyclone technology generates the strongest suction power to powerfully remove dust, dirt, and pet hair from the home or car. To order your Dyson Animal Vac, go to DysonDeals.com. DysonDeals.com to order your Dyson Animal Vac today.
Dyson, music to your ears.
Hi, this is Ken Jones from the Prince of Ponds podcast. The frogs are shaking the shakers, the turtles are hitting the slapsticks, and the koi are blowing the trumpets. It's party time here at Prince of Ponds. Out under the swaying palm trees, the pond fairies are kicking up their heels and spinning in delight in the twilight. Here on Pet Life Radio, it's time to celebrate the magic of ponds, waterfalls, fountains, and water gardens at the Prince of Ponds podcast.
Let's talk pets. On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
So give us the big picture, the big view of what happened after this film was out. Is a big, big release, was showing everywhere. The public loved it. He made almost an instant fortune off of this and moved out to California and bought up the San Fernando Valley. And what happened in the years later? Tarzan has continued to be big for decades. Just give us a feel for just how big Tarzan has been and how much has been done. How many productions have been done about Tarzan? And did he ever fade away?
He did. Just a little history there. It did so well that in 1923, Burroughs did something no one else had ever done, which was he incorporated himself. And started a licensing company to license Tarzan and his other characters. And so that is really when the money started pouring in for Burroughs, because everybody wanted Tarzan. They had Tarzan cigarettes. They had Tarzan gum. They had Tarzan gasoline, bread, Tarzan toys, belt buckles, T-shirts, a Tarzan club. They did that twice in the Clans of America when they started it. Before they knew it, they had 400,000 boys want to join, and they had to disband it because they couldn't pay for the literature to go out to them.
It was just too big.
Yeah, he wrote 26 Tarzan novels, and then they did close to 80 films made of Tarzan. About half of those are unauthorized in the countries of China and India and Turkey and places like that. Everybody's got their version of Tarzan. But they've had about 40 films with about 27 or 28 different people playing the character of Tarzan. And even now today, Warner Brothers has two Tarzan live-action films in development. Constantine Films out of Germany has a 3D animated Tarzan is actually in production now. So he's really not just diminishing, except not as many people. There's not as many merchandising things. Of course, Disney did really well in 1999 with their Tarzan, which was an excellent film. But he's still kicking, still swinging.
Yeah, still swinging, right? Yeah, from my reading, I mean, if you include the unofficial Tarzan movies as well, there's been almost 100 of those in almost 100 years. You include the television shows, put all that. You've got a production, an average of one a year on this character for 100 years. That's just amazing. There's got to, you know, got to be very few characters in film history that would come anywhere near close to that.
I think that Ron Ely, I think he came close to 50 episodes. And some of those they actually combined and made into a feature film and released those in theaters. So it's incredible, this character of Tarzan, this feral child that's raised by apes.
Well, now, tell us about the most famous Tarzan of all, as far as the actor, Weissmuller. Would it be fair to say he's probably has been the most popular, well-known Tarzan?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's beyond a shadow of a doubt. There's a story about him that I've always thought was very funny. He was down in Cuba, and he was there for a golf tournament, but it was during that war where Castro is trying to take over the country and all this. So they had rebels, and it was hard to tell who was on whose side. And so he was in a Jeep riding to the golf course, and some rebels came out with guns and stopped him. And they said, you can't go any further. Well, he said, don't worry about it. And he stood up in the Jeep and did the Tarzan yell. And they got so excited, they put down their guns and they ran over to the Jeeps. And the guys they were fighting against on the other side of the road, they put down their guns and ran over to see Tarzan in the Jeep. That's how famous
he was. They really knew who he was.
Since I did this documentary, everywhere I go, I meet people who either a relative of theirs or even them had met Weissmuller or has a Weissmuller story. And everybody seems to take credit for teaching him how to swim nowadays. he must have swam in every swim pool in the United States, because I keep hearing he swam in our pool here, you know.
Well, for those that don't know, he was an Olympic winner at swimming. He was one of the best.
Yes, and you know, it's my understanding, and I don't know how much this is folklore, but they say that his style of swimming was all wrong, and yet he won all these gold medals, and I think some of his records still stand, I believe, in some events. So it's funny about him, but he was from everything I have been able to uncover about Johnny, he was a wonderful man who was a very giving person. And I don't think that he was really treated right by the studios. You know, they let Marino Sullivan do a lot of movies, but they never would let him do anything. He could only do Tarzan.
How many films did he star in?
It was 10. Well, they had, of course, the book has a Tarzan yell, which is more of a cry of a bull ape. But his version is the one been accepted as the yell.
Well, it's the one I love. I loved it as a kid. When you heard that, you knew something exciting was about to happen, because Tarzan was on his way.
Yeah, yeah. And what's funny to me is that word Umgawa. You know, that's not in any of the Burroughs books. It was something created by the screenwriters, and it meant anything they needed it to mean. It meant to go, to come, stay there. There was one time where Tarzan set a trap, and he needed some leaves to cover it, so he started yelling Umgawa, and instantly the monkeys in the trees understood they needed to shake the leaves and cover the trap. So that's one of those Hollywood words.
Wow, amazing. So what do you think? Are there any monkeys left over in the swamps of Louisiana from this film?
You have to buy the DVD. I'm not telling that to you. I'm talking to your listeners. But that's one I kind of hold close to the vest.
Fair enough. What about that other story I heard about the killing of a lion in this film? Tell us about that.
That's a very fascinating story. I mean, that's for the Humane Society. And according to Elmo, he killed the lion. But there's several versions of that. And some people don't believe he killed the lion at all. And other people believe that the lion was, that he did kill the lion. Others believe it was killed off screen and brought on. To me, the thing is that's important to realize is the lion was alive, and after the scene, it was dead. So somebody killed it just for the sake of making a movie. I think that's sad, but it wasn't that unusual at that time for animals to be terribly mistreated, for horses to be put in positions to break legs and be shot and that sort of thing, or even shot for the film.
Well, in those days, even human beings were treated very badly.
That's right.
This was 100 years ago. almost.
Right.
Is there any location you wanted to shoot for your documentary or a bit of research that you wanted to do that you just didn't get to do?
There was one major thing that really came along too late, and I didn't have time to really confirm it. But there's a story of how a young woman who was a German spy dressed like a man and somehow got onto the crew there in South Louisiana during the making of the film, and she was spying on them building ships for the war effort right off of Oka Island, which is one of the places they shot the film at. She was giving information to some Germans who were in the swamps, and then she went out to California with the crew. They started watching her there. She went up to visit a well-known spy in San Francisco and was arrested along with that spy at that time. So I thought that was pretty fascinating.
Wow. So the first Tarzan movie is a spy story, too.
Yes. Isn't that incredible? I mean, it's one of those wells that you just dig a little deeper and find another nugget.
Well, your documentary is very well done. It's very thorough. I was surprised at just how many different ways you looked at this thing and all the different places you went to try to uncover this story. It's a very impressive piece of work. It's very nicely done. So I love seeing it. And I can't wait to get home tonight and watch it again.
Well, thank you. Appreciate really. That. We're very excited about the offering, and there's really nothing I'd change about it.
Well, I want you to tell us a little bit more about it here in a minute. But before we do, I have one final question on this whole Tarzan story thing. You know, here at Jungle Deep, we're all fans of the tropical rainforest. Have a love for the jungle and its creatures, and you just can't be interested in the jungle and, of course, not be aware of Tarzan and have some kind of feelings about that. But I want to ask you, since you've taken such a close look at this, what do you think Tarzan represents to the American public?
You know, that is a question that has been asked many times by many people. Why does this character is so enduring? Conclusion I can come to is, if you ever read an Edgar Rice Burroughs book, especially if you read a Tarzan book, it is one of those books that you can read it and then go back about 2 or 3 days later and read it again. And he can describe an entire scene in a sentence or a paragraph, and you can visually capture it in your mind, and it pulls you into that story with this character. And that's the only thing I can figure. It all goes back to the genius of Edgar Rice Burroughs and his ability to tell a story. He is a tremendous writer. I mean, even his westerns. And I love Louis L'Amour. I read him. But I have to say that I love Burroughs' westerns just as much as Louis. I think it's what it goes back to. That's why it stayed on. And if people will pick up the Tarzan book and read it, they'll want to read another Tarzan book.
So great storytelling.
Yes.
And what do you think it tells us about our attitude towards nature and towards the jungle 100 years ago? And do you think that's changed?
I think that, yes, I do think it's changed, but I think it's changed for the better. I think that there are a lot more people that care about the environment, a lot more people that care about something like littering. And so I think it's rippled out from just the jungle to more and more. I'm reading more and more stories about this raft out in the Pacific Ocean of just trash and how it's killing all the sea life and all these things. I think that a lot of people's view of the earth could stem from that same type mentality of Tarzan, of that being one with nature. I mean, this is the only planet we got.
Yeah, Tarzan's kind of a confusing, complex character because he's king of the jungle. He's got a relationship with a lot of wildlife. He's friends with a lot of these animals. And, of course, at the same time, he dominates them and doesn't hesitate to kill if he feels the need. And he had to kill just to eat.
Right.
It's interesting.
It honestly is.
That relationship.
The fact that he hated, that's one thing Burroughs always talked about, is how he hated cooked meat. And now he would, but you know, he didn't waste it. He would kill the animal for food, especially like a deer, and then he would eat what he wanted and hide it and then go back and get it again. So and of course he dominated the apes, these apes, by the way, were not your typical gorillas like you see in most Tarzan films. They were a missing link between ape and man called the Mangani. So he was really king of these apes. more than the gorillas. He and gorillas did not get along at all.
Yeah, I remember in the first book, in his first encounter with a gorilla, he was attacked by a gorilla. I think that was the first one he killed with his new knife that he just found in his father's cabin, as I recall.
Yeah, you know, Burroughs never went to Africa, and he never really studied. In the first Tarzan book, he talked about a tiger, and it was quickly told him that there were no tigers in Africa, so he changed it to another animal of sorts, a leopard or something like that. Gorillas really don't attack like that either. Chimpanzees are a lot more dangerous animals than gorillas.
Yeah, but I, frankly... I'm sure he's made several mistakes in reporting on the behavior of some of these animals, and yet, from what I've read so far, I've been very impressed at this man, the way he describes the behavior of these animals. I get the impression he studied them. He writes like he knows these animals. He describes them. A lot of his descriptions are very accurate. The way their tails flick and the postures they get into, and even describing the way their muscles are moving and such, I thought, man, this guy's... You know, he's an educated man. That was obvious to me.
Yeah, he was an avid reader and researcher. And, of course, he was in the military and went to military academies, taught, I think, history and geography at the military academy. Even as a kid, he taught. So he was very much a student of war. And if you read more of the Tarzan books, there's a whole lot more of them, especially John Carter, where they have so much strategy and war, and which I enjoy reading myself, even though I'm not really wild about war. I don't think anybody's really wild about it, but it got any sense. But he tells it in such a way that the strategy is fascinating.
Well, tell us a little bit more about your film. That is, how can people learn more about it? How can people get in touch with you and learn about your documentary and get a copy of it? It's readily available. Tell us a little bit about that.
We started a website called www.TarzanLordLAJungle. It's like Lord of the Jungle, Louisiana Jungle, but just TarzanLordLAJungle.com. And we have a lot of information on there, a lot of archives and footage, or photos rather. And then we have a place on there where you can order the DVD if you desire. We'll mail it to you right away. All this was part of our plan, you know, to get this word out. And I think that's been part of the most fulfilling thing to me is to sit down and write, this is what I'm going to accomplish with this project, and from start to finish, do that.
I want to mention that along the way, you've had, there's a couple events we could talk about. You just had a Tarzan festival, which was a kind of a big deal all by itself, and you're about to go to the Dum Dum, and tell us what the Dum Dum is. So tell us about both those things a little bit.
Well, we had the very first Tarzan Festival in the history of the character in Morgan City last April 2012. We premiered the documentary there, and then we also, the next night, we showed the original Tarzan film that we went in and re-edited and fixed the black and white so it really was rich. And we added all new orchestral score by Kermit Poling. And so we screened that. And that was important to screen that original Tarzan film because they had promised those people years ago when they were making the film that someday they would come back and show it. And they never did. And so this was really the opportunity we had to go back and screen this film for their relatives and friends.
Terrific. That's terrific. Well, we might have missed that, but there's something else coming up that that you're participating in that's kind of a big deal. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, it's the Dum Dum is in the books, they had a ceremony where the old women, Mangani, would beat on logs, a rhythm, and the males would get out in the middle and dance around under the moonlight. It was called the Dum Dum. And so it was a big celebration is really what it was. And so that's Burroughs Bibliophiles, which is a group of men and women through the years that just love Burroughs, got together and formed this club, Burroughs Bibliophile, and they started having these conventions every year in different locations. This is the 100th anniversary of Tarzan celebration. It's going to be in Tarzana, California at the Warner Woodland Hills Marriott. I have a Burroughs stamp being put out by the post office, and just a lot of festivities. A lot of movie Tarzans will be there. We'll be showing our film. It's going to be a very exciting time. I'm excited that I have the only Tarzan film that's coming out during this celebration.
That's great. That's great. And who are the guests of honors at this event?
Jane Goodall is a featured speaker.
Can you imagine that? Isn't that something?
Yes, and she's a humongous Tarzan fan.
I never knew that.
She was always jealous of the other Jane and wanted to be Tarzan's Jane, and it really got her interested in animals. So there's a good example of a person whose life was drastically changed for the better and for the betterment of all of us is in her life. And then we have Ron Ely that will be there and Denny Miller, who is a Tarzan and also is on the wagon train. Ron Ely is the Tarzan from the 60s in the television show. Casper Van Dien will be there. He was Tarzan in the 90s. And also the executive producer of John Carter will be there. And some other people, a lot of people, sculptors, artists. I don't know if you know this, but Joe Kubert, who did so many Tarzan comic books for DC Comics, he passed away very recently. And he was the editor and main artist for the Tarzan series for DC. And I talked to Joe just a couple of months ago, and he was so gracious to loan us some artwork for our Tarzan exhibition there in the Louisiana State Museum in Patterson. It goes on for a year, by the way. Joe will be missed at this convention.
Well, how can our listeners find out more about this? They could go to the website for this event. Isn't that herbzine.com? Is that herbzine.com? Is that, do I have that correct?
Absolutely. Herbzine. If you want to know anything about Tarzan or John Carter or Burroughs or any of those other books, go to herbzine.com. And every Friday they have a web magazine that comes out. So, and they have like 10,000 rooms in this website. So it's big, and they've been nothing but kind. So I highly recommend anybody going to Herbzine and finding out more.
That's Herb, standing for Edgar Rice Burroughs. And it's a hugely active website.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of the people from Burroughs fandom call him Herb.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, they do. I don't know if they ever said it to his face or not, but they call him Herb a lot.
Well, I am so sorry we are out of time, but so glad you took the time to talk with us about this amazing project of yours and the whole amazing Tarzan phenomena. And I appreciate everything you've done to help us with this. So thank you very much for being with us, Al.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Ken. I just wish you big success from everything that you're doing. I just think it's wonderful.
Well, and we wish you big success with your brand new documentary film, too. And that people can find out more about it. It's right on our website at Jungle Deep, where you could click and find out where you can get your own copy to see this documentary about the very first Tarzan movie.
All right. Thank you, Ken. Bye-bye.
Did you know that there is a real, true-to-life Tarzan roaming the jungles of South Africa this very day? It is true. His name is DeWitt Du Toit, a 25-year-old who is auditioning for the lead role of the next Tarzan movie, trying to capture the attention of Hollywood. It's an amazing story. This determined young man for years has been learning the ways of Tarzan, engaged in bodybuilding and spending half of his time in the jungles, cavorting with wild animals to come as close as possible to actually becoming the famous character. Combined with a state-of-the-art internet marketing campaign, Mr. Toit intends to capture the attention of Hollywood movie producers. He has captured our attention here at Jungle Deep. I've just heard back from my invitation for Mr. Toit to join us on the show. We are going to find out more about what drives this young man, of which some call crazy. I don't think he's crazy, and I do think he is massively determined. I think he's more intimate with the tropical rainforest than most of us can ever hope to be. And have you seen his pictures? Wow! Visit our website, for sure. It'll be challenging making the arrangements for this interview halfway around the world to Africa herself, but I will do all I can to make this conversation a reality, and you will hear it here, first, with this exclusive interview. Be sure to share Jungle Deep Podcast with your friends and co-workers. The show is my creation and at my personal expense. It is not currently subsidized by any business or organization. Audience growth is especially important for Jungle Deep to succeed and prosper, so share the show. You can see beautiful photos and learn more about Jungle Deep at our website, calaverasgold.tv. Now that's Spanish, Calaveras, calaveras.tv, as in television. You gotta check it out. Where else can you go for this kind of fun? Just click on the Jungle Deep title in the header directory. Our show notes pages have valuable links for you. I invite you to email me at jungledeep@calaverasgold.tv and follow me on Twitter. Search for Jungle Deep or KenJones56, all one word. I would love to hear your ideas for the show. Well, the show's over for today, so it's time to refill my Mai Tai, mount my elephant, and head back into the jungle.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.